if you're going to copy an entire business model, like, you got to do it better. Because otherwise, why would someone go for the copy instead of the original?
I feel like that's a lot of pressure to put on yourself, though. I don't know that you have to do it better. I think I would maybe, like, modify that in my own perspective and say, if you're going to copy, do it for a specific audience is actually the easiest way to do it. Do it for a niche.
You know, they say women shouldn't be bossy.
We're out here reclaiming that word. What's so wrong with being the boss? I'm Tara Reid, the CEO of a multi-million dollar ed tech business.
And I'm Katie Gatti Tossan, better known as Money with Katie on the internet.
At our core, we're driven by a shared ambition to build our own mini empires.
Welcome to Bossy. One of the things that I feel like I'm really getting out of doing this show with you is that we get an opportunity to ask each other questions kind of in real time. So it's kind of meta in that way, because we'll be talking about business or things in the past, but it's like we're both still in it. We're both still running the businesses.
Yeah, so, and give each other advice.
Yeah. One of the things that I actually would love to get your opinion on is the fact that I feel like I really struggle with staying in my lane and not comparing myself and our progress to other people and brands in our competitive set. So I feel like I have a tendency to look around and be like, well, what are they doing? And if it seems like they're growing faster, I'm like, oh, well, maybe we should be doing that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because I think that sometimes it's useful to look at what other people are doing as inspiration, but maybe not useful if it's making you feel icky and like making you feel like you're behind and I'm not doing enough.
Yeah.
Those are two different ways at looking at someone, though. Are you looking at people for inspo or are you looking at people for shaming yourself?
I think it's probably more the latter, because it's like a, hey, let me see. I got a benchmark, right? How are we doing? Let me see how we fall in this lineup. And so it's difficult, though, to determine, is this productive because it's giving me ideas, or is this counterproductive because it's distracting me from what I really should be focused on, which is executing the vision that we currently have. But it's, you know, sometimes you feel like, oh, I might be missing stuff. If I'm two heads down and I'm not paying attention to anything that others are doing, am I just in my own little world and like falling behind?
Yeah, no, that's hard, because I think a lot of times when we're looking at other people's businesses, things other people are doing, we're doing it mindlessly. We're kind of just like scrolling, seeing what they're doing, or we heard something and overheard it. And it's not like we're intentionally thinking like, am I looking at this for inspiration, or am I looking at this to like kind of push, like see what else someone is doing to see what I'm not doing? We're not even aware of that a lot of times. I think actually, as we're having this conversation, I'm realizing it might be useful to be more aware of it when you're doing it. Like, I'm gonna look at this person and I'm gonna look for inspo. Because when you're looking for inspiration, it just feels different, and then it becomes productive. Because it's possible that someone's doing something that's useful that you could learn from. Like, I don't think that it makes sense to run a business and like have your eyes closed the entire time to what the whole industry is doing. That's not productive, maybe. And I think I have seasons. Sometimes I'm looking at what people are doing. Sometimes I'm like totally heads down. I don't know what anybody is doing, not consuming a lot of other people's stuff. So I do think that there's a balance, but I think the way you have to look at other people's stuff is through the lens of inspiration, not self-shame.
So intentionality and almost embracing the fact that I'm going out, I'm seeking out this information because I want the inspiration, maybe even the imitation. It's like, what am I actually going to proactively go out and get versus like, oh, I'm bored, I'm going to open my phone and oh, look, like there's someone that, oh my gosh, wait, what are they? It's like there's that flustered vibe to it where you kind of just immediately start like dogging on yourself.
Yeah.
I think that's where it goes poorly.
I think the reason that we often dog on ourselves and get hard on ourselves about looking at other people and what they're doing is because we feel like, oh, I can't do what they're doing. Like, we have this shame in our culture around copying.
Yeah.
Like, copying is a bad thing. Or if I use another word, though, drawing inspiration, like sometimes we're more okay with that. But like at the end of the day, it's the same thing, right? We feel like it's not good to copy someone else's business, to copy what someone else is doing with their brand. And so our brains almost just don't go there when we're looking at what someone's doing. We don't go, okay, what are the things I'm inspired by that I want to do? And so if you can't go there, then you just go to like, what are the things they're doing that I can't do? Oh, they're doing better than me. Like, it's so easy to go into the doom when you've locked off and closed the door to being able to be inspired by them and doing some of the things that they're doing. Because there are lots of companies out there that just straight up copy other pieces. I would say most companies are doing, pulling, copying inspiration from other places.
You know who's the best at this?
Who?
Mark Zuckerberg.
Facebook?
This is Meta's entire business model. This is their entire business model. He is the king of effectively plagiarizing other businesses, and he gets away with it. It's like their entire roadmap. They snipe the best of everything.
Sniper, no sniping.
Even
we think it's bad to do that.
Keep sniping.
Sniper, keep sniping.
Because you have an $800 billion market cap, so clearly something is working for
you. Also, this is like how big companies, Facebook is a big, or Meta is a big company now. This is how it works. You go look at what other people are doing. That's why people acquire businesses. That's the game, really.
It's their Frankenstein's monster, though, of everything that has ever been popular in social. So it's like he sits back. He says, I'm going to watch everyone else spend their money on the R&D and spend their time on the R&D. And then once they get something that's taken off, I'm going to first offer to buy them. And if they say no, then I'm going to say, okay, well, stories, those are mine now.
Oh, they definitely took that.
Mine now. So it's Facebook. That was MySpace. Facebook was his spin on MySpace, right? Mm. That already was out there. Or Friendster.
What was the spin?
Whatever it was.
What was the spin?
He elevated it. He made it more elitist because it was like only a Harvard EDU email address could get on this site. And it felt like an adult version of MySpace. And so it kind of had this cachet that MySpace didn't have. And so it felt a little less juvenile, I think.
Interesting. But that's a pretty small spin. That really, the only spin there in a big way is target market.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, I'm going to go after this specific niche target of Harvard students, eventually all college students, eventually everybody and their mama is now on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
But like, starting...
And like, only the mamas.
No, it's just my grandma at this point.
It's just...
Like, she's just like...
Like, I can't remember the last time. But that's the thing is, like, then, like, Periscope and Clubhouse got big. And then they added Facebook Live.
I remember Periscope. Okay.
Where'd they go? They're nowhere now because there's Facebook and Instagram Live. Snapchat was gaining momentum. Boom, now we got stories. By the way, Instagram, he just bought them. He said, you know what? That's cooler now. And all the kids want to be on that. I'm just going to buy it.
So do you think of this as a bad strategy? Like, do you feel a little about that practice?
I mean, define bad because it's clearly working. It's working. But I think it's one of those things, to your point, like culturally we have such an aversion to the idea of copying other people because it seems like, oh, it's not fair. Oh, you're cheating. Oh, but I mean, like TikTok, that's another popular one. TikTok got really popular kind of out of nowhere. During the pandemic, it was originally that app Musical.ly, and then it became TikTok, and then everyone was on TikTok, and then they were like Reels.
Musical.ly? They were a totally different product and then pivoted.
Yep.
Okay, got it.
And then the Instagram launched Reels. And so
I think
they're doing the broadcast channels, which is basically a riff on Discord. And then they're obviously, I think they noticed that Twitter/X was kind of down the tubes, and they were like... Threads. And
poor,
you know,
Twitter.
My favorite thing about Threads is the way that they pitched it. Like, the brand positioning of Threads was like, it's like Twitter, but people are nice to you.
Yeah. Okay. No, this, I forgot about this because Instagram has a Twitter-like product too. Now, I'm actually refusing to use it. I'm just like, I can't.
I am
another
too.
One. I will eventually probably end up being there, but I'm just like holding off. Okay. So I forgot that they also, you were bringing up all these good examples of Facebook just like... swipe or keep swiping.
And I think those things have worked for them. I will say that, like, I worked at Meta when they made the switch. It was my second week of working for Facebook, and they go, we're Meta now. I was like, oh, okay. Interesting timing. But that was the first, in my opinion, their first big bet on we're going to get in front of something. The metaverse and this big Web3 virtual reality thing, they weren't really, I mean, they bought Oculus, so in some sense, they didn't invent the idea. The headsets, the, like, crazy clunky things that no one is going to wear until they look cool because no one's going to put something hideous on their
the
face.
The nerd bros will use it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The
nerd bros are good, but that's a tiny little segment of the market,
the market
right?
The size of nerd
that's
bros.
That's not a, you can't make $1 billion off the nerd bros. But I think that was their first time that they, like, really tried something that was fully their own and their own bet. And, like, the consensus about that was Floptopia.
It's Floptopia. Facebook so has far. Been promising metaverse stuff for a while. First of all, they like I don't even fully know what it even means.
I don't think they know what it means.
They don't even know
I
what
think
it means.
They're like, this is where we see things going, and we're gonna figure it out. But they're trying to like stake their claim on it, you know. But I'm like, that's just interesting to me because why are people really staying, right? Like, why are we still on Instagram? Why are people still on Facebook? I think we're seeing people aging out a little bit of these different platforms, and so you have to keep innovating.
Keep going.
But like, all of it ladders up to keeping and monetizing eyeballs.
Yeah.
And to me, their biggest risk is not that these platforms are they're going to lose the eyeballs. They have what, like 3 billion monthly active users? Like, you basically have half the world's population on your product. There's not much more room to grow.
Yeah.
Anyone with an internet connection is on the product. But the fact that I think the iOS 14 privacy thing to me is a bit of an indicator of where the trouble could be on the horizon, which is that if your entire business model is ads,
yeah,
then if no one is paying you directly and you rely on that targeting, they probably will keep innovating to find ways to do that.
Yeah.
But that is a big risk for them, I think. Like, far more of an existential risk than like they're just ripping off the best features of everybody else. And they launched like Meta Verification. That's like what, $2 billion a year out of the hundreds of billions of dollars that they make on ads. I mean, it's just like a tiny, tiny little piece of the puzzle.
One of the things, when I hear about Facebook doing this, and I think you've actually pulled out like a bunch of examples, so it's really clear and in my face right now, it kind of feels like it gives me permission to lean into this too. Like, in our culture, we have this like don't copy anybody thing, value. And now when I see big companies like Facebook doing it, I'm like, okay, well, like, if it's working for Facebook, literally in this scenario, it works really well for Facebook. And scenarios where they try to do their own thing, like the metaverse, it's like, well, what are they even doing? It's kind of a flop thus far. So that's actually the thing that's working. That's the blueprint thus far. Mm-hmm. And I think there's nothing wrong with following a blueprint, right? And one of those blueprints is, in business, go find things that people are doing successfully. It could be in a different industry, it could be in a different lane, but take that, kind of put your own little spin on it. It doesn't have to be a massive spin. A little spin is fine, and go forward with it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that kind of gives me permission, I think. I'm feeling inspired more to do this, because this is something I think about a lot. I know that when we started this show, we talked about inspiration and things we liked and things we didn't like out there. And I think when you're starting a business, you absolutely should do that.
Yeah.
You should look at what's out there already that I like, what's out there already that I don't like. I often talk to people a lot when they have like app ideas, and they go like, okay, well, I first need to figure out if someone's already doing it, because mm-hmm. if they are, then I should stop.
And you're like, wrong.
Wrong. Like, you know, when you go down the grocery aisle, how many brands of bread are in there? There's just like a whole aisle of different brands of bread doing a slightly different spin on mm-hmm. it, right? Facebook's a little spin on MySpace. People are already kind of doing things, and you have to look at that. So when we started this show, we talked a lot about this podcast that we like called My First Million.
Yep.
And how we wanted to do sort of like a girl talk women's version of that, where they talk about business, they talk about tactics, mm-hmm. and they just sort of talk about their lives, and you get to sort of chronicle and see them growing and expanding as business people, as entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
And I don't think we ever went like, oh, that's a bad thing that we're talking about, an example that we like and things that we want to do and sort of take from that. I don't feel bad about that. Do you ever feel bad about
no,
that?
No, well, because I think it was someone even in the reply tweet when we said we were going to do the show, someone was like, oh, it's My First Million for women. And I was like, sure, if that's how you want to think about it.
Yeah.
But I think we looked at the show and said, this show resonates with both of us. Also, by the way, Tara is not like an avid podcast listener like I am. I listen to podcasts constantly. My First Million is like the only podcast that Tara listened to.
It was the only one I really knew.
It was the only one she liked. And I'm like, well, that says something, right?
Yeah.
Because there must be something about that show that's entertaining enough for you to want to engage in a medium that you don't even particularly enjoy.
Yeah.
And so I think when I looked at My First Million, I said, what do I like about this show? What are they doing really, really well, better than everyone else? Their chemistry is amazing. Mm. I don't know Sam or Sean personally, but I also don't really tend to like listening to shows that are bro-y, but I would be like on my walk listening to My First Million and I'm grinning, walking down the street like an idiot, just smiling to myself because they just make, it's just entertaining.
I like that you feel like a fly on the wall of like two friends talking to each other and sort of strategizing and thinking about things. I liked that element and we talked about that too.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. It's like there's an element of aspirational relatability to them where like I do not feel like I'm on their level, but I feel like by listening to them, I could get there. Mm-hmm. And so it's like that saying of you're the average of the five persons you spend the most time with. I was like, okay, well, here's two people to add to my rotation that are going to elevate my thinking and my game a little bit. But there are things I don't like about it too.
Yeah.
Like, I think that it is a little bro-y. And sometimes I feel kind of, like, out of the club a little bit. Because I'm like, I don't know that these two people would actually, like, enjoy being around me. Because it just feels a little bit like I'm one thing removed from them kind of culturally. Which I think was a barrier. Whereas I think that's something that we were both thinking. It's like, there's probably a large contingent of people that would feel the exact same way. A lot of women that would like to listen to women talk about business instead. Right.
Can you imagine, though, if we had been like, okay, in the mindset of like swipe or no swiping, we're not going to look at what people are doing. We're going to actively be in this energy of like, we don't want to copy anyone. Like, don't let, like, let's not look at that. I feel like we would not be creating the show in the same way. We wouldn't be like evolving and expanding the same way. I think we would have been in imposter syndrome and like it would have been harder for us to get started because we didn't have a couple blueprints of things that we liked that we wanted to go after. I think it's actually made us more productive. And when I see people who are in the energy of like not finding kind of like something that they want to walk in the direction towards, it leaves you kind of aimless, actually. It's hard to get started.
We'll be right back to the conversation after a quick break. Okay, back to the show. I think one thing that I've realized as a content creator on the internet is that there is no such thing as an original idea.
No.
Everything is a riff on something else.
Yes, 100%. I think this has always been something that I have understood because growing up, my dad is a jazz musician. In jazz music, this concept of like not only improvising but referencing other pieces of music is a good thing. It's almost like an homage to the masters of the past. In fact, there's this little like I call it like the jazz musician's giggle that I notice like my dad and his friends do when they go out and hear music. And what they do is like they hear a little reference. Sometimes I don't even know the reference, right? But someone will be playing the trumpet or will be playing the piano and they'll play just like in their original or in their song a little snippet of somebody else's.
And then it's kind of like an inside joke.
It's an inside joke. And everybody has this delight. This delight that you put in a little copy of someone. Like, it's a delightful thing. And everybody feels respected by it.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. And so I think that's really shaped my view of it. But I do think this concept around copying has been something that's been a point of contention with me and my friends. I have two friends in particular who, like, really value not copying. It's like that's a value to them. And I think I really value my ability. I think I'm a really good copier, to be honest. Like, I think it's one of my superpowers that like, and it extends to like, I scrolled Instagram and I saw some girl with a cool bow outfit. And so I'm like, I want one too. Mm-hmm. Like, that would be cool for me too. Or like, I'm going to put my little spin on it, but like, I want to do that too. I think I get a lot of joy, that little giggle, out of doing that and having that experience. But I think it's been like a point of contention with some of my friends who have totally different values. I think about, there's this book, you know, Steal Like an Artist?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. Like, they have a couple principles in that book. One of them is what you said already, nothing's original. Like, the book starts with that premise that like everything's a remix, everything's a mashup. So like, don't really stress about this. I feel this way, interestingly, with fashion, where like every single thing you are wearing came from some designer on some runway that was a reference of some other designer that was a reference of some other designer. And like, you're probably, we're all wearing knockoffs of something or some spinoff of something. We just don't even know it.
Cue the Devil Wears Prada scene.
What's
where
that
she's
scene?
Like, cerulean. You think that you just plucked that out of a bargain bin? But really, Oscar de la Renta, and she like traces the lineage of her cerulean sweater. Yes. And Annie's just standing there like, holy shit, like what have I gotten myself into?
Same thing with business. Same thing with every little darn thing that you're doing is a reference of something else. So that's what the book is saying. Also, the book is saying like there's another principle of like stealing from many.
Yes.
That you don't necessarily want to steal from one person. You diversify your influences so that the mixed pot together ends up being something
totally
quote unquote
different.
Original.
Yeah.
Different. Yeah. Also, there's this principle in the book about not waiting to know who you are to get started. And I think a lot of people are like, I got to figure out exactly who I am, exactly what I want the business to do, exactly what my stance is, and then I can get started. And the whole idea is like you figure out what your unique combo is by starting that referencing. The way you get to understanding what your business, how your business is going to be unique, how you're going to be unique is by referencing and seeing what you like and don't like. And like, that's the practice of getting there. And then also like this concept of like creativity and subtraction, because once you start copying things, you can then start removing things and having limitations in your creative process, in your entrepreneurial process, and not having like everything come easy to you is a really good thing in creating creativity and new things. But the whole premise is you got to start by referencing and copying.
Mm. You know what's funny too is that there are examples, I think of like an Airbnb. When they started Airbnb, there was already some shitty website out there on the internet that allowed you to either swap places with someone.
Craigslist.
Like couch surf.
Yeah.
That was already out there. But what they did, it was they differentiated through the branding and through the user interface, where they added a layer of ease and trust and safety that wasn't in the original idea.
Little spin.
Little spin.
A little spin.
And even little things on the website where, for example, I remember when I was in user experience work, we would look at their website a lot because they were very intentional about even the tiniest things of how much space are we going to give the host to describe their place. Most websites will give you a block of text this big. And that signals to the user, I'm supposed to write a block of text.
Ah.
They gave you one line. And so the host is like, oh, how do I succinctly explain this? So it's even in those tiny design choices where they are iterating away from the original and differentiating and then basically just gobbling up market share as a result of that.
Yeah, 100%.
So why reinvent the wheel, right? Like we've made jokes about this before, like specifically in the sales funnel episode, we talked about this because chances are if there's something you want to be doing, someone else is probably already doing it. Mimicking strategy is totally fair game. But
yeah.
I think the one way, Airbnb example notwithstanding, one way to get away with it is to, if you're going to copy an entire business model, like you got to do it better. Because otherwise, why would someone go for the copy instead of the original?
I feel like it's a lot of pressure to put on yourself, though. I don't know that you have to do it better. I think if you go in with that pressure on yourself of I can copy it, but I can only do it if I do it better, then you're like start doing things and optimizing things for better as opposed to like for your customer. I think I would maybe like modify that in my own perspective and say, if you're gonna copy, then you want to do it for a specific audience is actually the easiest way to do it. Do it for a niche.
That there's actually such a good example of that out of Germany in the 1990s. Okay, so this is a crazy story. In 1999, three German brothers in their early 20s found eBay. They saw like American eBay.
Yeah.
And they were like, we should make this for Germans. So it's like a regional exploitation, right? You're taking advantage of the fact that you have a different customer base. They duplicated the eBay model almost exactly. Like straight copy. And within 4 months, they sold it to eBay for $43 million. They didn't even run that thing for 100 days and they exited for $43 million.
And sold it to the company they copied from.
Yes. And so the learnings are like, it's interesting because in the 1990s, I didn't know this until I started looking into this story. Germany was like 5 years behind the United States in terms of like e-commerce development. So those brothers were very smart to be like, well, if we're kind of like pacing behind them, we could just, that's like a time portal to the future. Just go look at what's happening in the US and copy it.
Time portal to the future. That really hit my soul.
Oh, Well, thank you.
I like the idea.
A little time portal. Yeah.
Yeah. That like copying is like you just getting into a time portal. Yep. Yeah. You're just like using a superpower. I love this. Okay. I'm using that idea.
And this was also an interesting challenge, though, because 80% of Germans at the time did not even have credit cards. So have you ever tried to buy something online without a credit card? It's pretty hard. You can't. But it's like they weren't even really being innovative. They just saw a gap in their market, something that hadn't been done there before, and then they exploited it. So I'm like, some things really are layups. Starbucks is another example. Starbucks, Howard Schultz started Starbucks in, I think, 1971, and they sold espresso makers and beans. So, like, they weren't a coffee. It wasn't like a place that you went and hung out. It was like a Crate and Barrel ass, like, you go
or to have a made cup of coffee.
Yeah,
like, you get your beans there, and you go home and make the cup of coffee. Yeah.
And then he went to Europe, and he's like, oh, these Europeans got these places where they go and drink. They sit down and drink it. Like,
they stay there. They chill.
He comes back to America. He's like, we're going to do that. And now there's a Starbucks on every block. So it's like same thing. There's like a little bit of like cult. It's not
but just for a niche audience.
Yeah.
Because you can't. That's a really interesting example, the Starbucks one. Because the way that Europeans, for example, kind of like have this chill, well, they'll like stay at the restaurant and like kind of continue there all day. Like, once you put that in America for a different audience, niche audience, or maybe not niche, but a different audience, it has a whole different feel to it, right? Starbucks does not exactly feel like a European
cafe. That's a fair point.
The reason why is because the Americans bring the like rushing sense of anxiety. Like, everybody's like, so we're going to work in there, right? We're just going to like work and hustle instead of like chill and talk. But like, that's all you need.
We got the mobile app and we're ordering ahead of time. We're running in, we're getting our drink, we're running back out.
Being mad American.
But Howard Schultz is like, fuck, that's not what I wanted to do.
Well, but that was enough. All you had to do was put it in front of a different customer, and that was enough to make the whole vibe different.
It became something different.
You don't have to do the big spin. What are some places where you have copied things in your own business?
My core product.
The whole darn thing.
Well, yes and no.
Yeah.
So back when I started Money with Katie, I didn't know how to make, I had no idea how to monetize it. I was like, well, I'm going to talk about money and we'll see what happens. But there was another creator that I liked who to this day is still anonymous. It's like an anonymous personal finance account. And she had a personal finance dashboard, basically, that was, hey, I built this thing that like it's my system for managing money, and I'm gonna sell it to you on Etsy.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing like she had made like $40,000 in a year selling this spreadsheet, and I was like, oh wait, I can just like put my own money management system into a spreadsheet and sell it to people. Like, that's what an amazing idea. So it's not like I've never actually seen the inside of hers, but it was just conceptually, I was like, oh, I didn't even think that someone would like pay for something like that. But seeing her do it, I was like, cool. So then I made my own, and it was completely different. It was my own spin on it.
Yeah.
But the concept of the product itself was me looking at someone else and going, that's an interesting way to monetize. I'm going to try that.
I definitely would say a good chunk. I'm going to go ahead and say 75 to 85% of my business has been copied or pulled from some source, multiple different sources, but some source for sure. At the beginning, I was really inspired by Pat Flynn and sort of what he was doing and sort of how he's building a business. Also really inspired by this guy, Brian Harris. And then my friend, Danielle, who had courses, and this, I actually was working on Collecto when I moved to work on Apps Without Code, and she had helped me build Art Collecting School for Collecto, which was sort of like a marketing engine for our service, and I learned about doing courses and how that all works, but there were a lot of pieces of inspiration that I drew from her. So I would say like a really big chunk of my business came from some other reference point, which is interesting going back to how we feel about the culture of swiper, no swiping. It's a bad thing to steal. But if you actually look at what people are actually doing, that's all they're doing. It's almost like the little secret about it all.
Ooh, I like that. That framing's good. That's kind of the dirty little secret is that everyone's kind of copying at each other.
Dirty little secret.
And now you're probably going to be a reference point for other people.
I know I am.
That's the funny part.
And I love
it
that.
It just continues down the chain.
I love that. I get a little, like, I get the jazz musician smirk on my face,
the
jazz giggle at like when I see people do stuff, and I'm like, oh, like, because to me that shows me how powerful of a person I am. Ooh. It's a compliment to me, mm-hmm. too. Mm-hmm. And also, it's like a showing that, like, as my work, whatever I'm doing to work on myself and expand myself as an entrepreneur, like, that's not only been useful for me, but it's also useful, like, in multiplier to other people. Like, that makes me feel good.
I like that. I also think, so, okay, if I assume there are people that listen to our show who maybe don't even, who have not started businesses yet.
Yeah.
But want to. Mm-hmm. And go, well, how could I use this? I think an interesting way to do this is to use a website called Flippa, FLIPPA.com.
Yeah.
It's used to buy businesses, but you can use this to find businesses that you could copy, businesses that are for sale. Right? So if you're not sure what type of business you should build, or maybe you're still in those early days, go see what others are building. Maybe you have a concept, an idea. Maybe you're an artist and you make custom prints. And you're like, how could I? Etsy would be another good site for this too.
Yeah.
See, like, popular Etsy shops. But what I like about Flippa is that because they're listing businesses for sale, you can sort by monthly cash flow.
Oh,
so not
and look at the good ones. The
you can look at the good ones. And not all of them are going to show you the details. Some of them will hide the name and just show you, like, numbers that you couldn't go and actually match up cash flow to business.
Yeah.
But I would say, like, 25% of them, it's like, it's all out there. So you could see, okay, this art shop is doing $20,000 a month, and this is their website. All right, well, now I'm going to go to their website. And then you can basically blueprint, like, this product is now creating this, you know, amount of cash flow. And so I was looking for examples of this online. I saw this self-moving pet ball. So it's kind of like this little toy for dogs that has, like, a motor or something inside of it. So it moves of its own volition, and then the dogs, like, chase it around.
They chase it. Okay.
It's pretty cute. And so the guy's basically just drop shipping. He's really just drop shipping. So drop shipping basically means you as the seller are the middleman between the buyer and the distributor. So you are really just, the only thing that you're really influencing is not the product, but the branding and the e-commerce checkout, you know, that type of experience around it, the marketing, those pieces of the business versus having to, like, come up with the product. So you look at the site, you see what they're selling, you go find the product, assess your margin, and then you test and learn from there. So this one guy was doing this with the ball. He started experimenting with TikTok ads. And so he would make videos with his dog and the product. And then he would basically just put out a, he made a TikTok profile, put out a ton of videos. And then once a video started to do well, he'd put some ad spend behind it.
Yeah.
And at first it, like, wasn't doing anything, or he'd be getting views, but they weren't translating to sales. So then he would test and learn from there. And then I would say probably within a month, he started doing a couple $100 in sales per day. Yeah. So he basically went from, like, has nothing, no product, no inventory, no idea to like, oh, now we're actively making money doing this.
Okay. And you saw this on Flippa.
I saw this on, like, I saw this story online about someone that did this.
Oh, that had done this. Okay, got it.
So I'm copying his story right now for the purpose of this episode. Mm. All very meta. And then I actually do know a guy in real life that did this, who he worked at Southwest at the same time that I did. And he launched a drop shipping site called Bison Coolers. And they basically sold Yeti knockoffs. So it's like it was like a product that was copying Yeti and was selling them at a lower price point with different branding. And now they have all sorts of tumblers, cooler sizes, whatever. They just started with this one cooler, right? And ran paid ads to the site and what have you.
And copied Yeti.
And copied Yeti. So people are searching Yeti cooler. I'm sure they're, like, buying some of the keywords or whatever so that, like, their site's popping up instead.
Aren't they expensive?
Yeti coolers? Yes, very much so. They're very, like, a premium product.
Big market for any price variation because mm-hmm. some people might be on a budget and want something like that.
Yes. Okay. This guy, before he quit at Southwest, Bison Coolers was doing $20 million a year in revenue before he left his full-time job. Which I'm like, why didn't you leave 3 years ago?
But yeah, you need to take your butt and go work on the business. If you're making $20 million and still moonlighting.
Yeah. What are you doing?
I want to know what was going on in his head, but I digress.
But I think it's just, like, some founders are very mission-driven. The product is, like, their baby. Mm. Other people are truly just good entrepreneurs who are savvy and can see gaps and might be like, oh, if I'm just trying to differentiate something that already exists,
yeah,
that's a pretty good, that's a portal to the future.
A portal
that is the shortcut.
It's the portal to the future. Okay, so one of the things that we've been experimenting with on this show is kind of doing some workshopping and working with folks who are listening and watching so that they can generate some of the same ideas for their businesses or their future businesses that we're talking about on the show. So, and by the way, I got this idea of asking people to comment in YouTube to kind of workshop their own ideas from workshops that I do in Apps Without Code, which I then copied from workshops that I saw other people do. So we're full circle copying people. So I want to try an activity with y'all.
Okay.
If you can go to YouTube, because we can see everybody's comments on YouTube. So go to YouTube and comment into the chat one business or brand that you really like and aspire to be like that maybe you could emulate something from, you could draw inspiration from. And also, if you can add to that, what's the one thing that you like that they do, that the specific thing is that you could lean into for inspiration? So one business that you like and one thing that they do specifically that you would love to lean into.
I love
it. We're embracing the copy inspo.
I love it. Well, then I will also make the shameless plug if we're doing that.
Yeah, we're doing activities.
We're doing activities to share the show with a friend. If you're enjoying it and you are like all in the, well, name pending, the Boss House.
The Boss House.
The Boss House.
H-A-U-S.
The H-A-U-S. Isn't that a Gaga thing? House of Gaga?
I don't know that she owns
I'm pretty
houses.
Sure we ripped off the H-A-U-S from something. See, it's impossible not to be meta. Anyway, if you're in it and you want to bring some friends over to the Boss House, if you can share the show with a friend, that would also be really, really helpful and lovely and to just help grow this community of entrepreneurs that are building businesses together.
Yeah. Swiper, keep swiping.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.